Accession number 23213, Reel 10.
Major Potts, Reel 10. You were saying that you spotted some enemy coming towards you.
Well, they were in the valley to the northwest, and so we sprayed them with some machine gun fire. We like to think we hit a couple. One did go down and the other one staggered, but how badly they were hit, we don't know, because they were 800,000 yards away.
Very long range.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, it let them know we were there and overcame the mortar shells again, which didn't please me.
Did you have any casualties or damage to those mortars?
Not that I know of. I got the artillery chap to fire a few shells from time to time just to jolly the Chinese along.
Could you see the Chinese positions from this
point? No. I think if they could see, they were looking through, they burrowed in through and were looking out through little holes in the front. Maybe wrong, but I may be right. It had never been known. Then we hadn't been told anything. And at about 12 o'clock or 11 or 12 o'clock, over to a hill to our really west-northwest, we saw an attack going in. And got on to battalion headquarters on the artillery net. Artillery always seemed to work. Infantry never works. And they said, oh, that's the KOSB battle patrol, or a battle patrol. I'm not certain it was a battle patrol, but anyway, they were doing something against the Chinese that was thought to be over there. It was a long way away, a mile. So we didn't get involved with that. And anyway, it was a hot day, and we sat there observing, looking, and occasional mortar fire.
When you saw this body of troops to the northwest going into the attack, how were they laid out on the ground?
Oh, they were pretty well spaced out. Well, bloody difficult to tell how far. People at 1,500 metres, really what they doing. I couldn't have said whether they had their rifles on their shoulders or not. But they were certainly firing because you could hear the shots.
Were they doing fire and movement on their revolvers?
I presume so, yes. As they weren't anything to do with us, we didn't pay too much attention. But there you are. That is war, or parts of war. Anyway, the afternoon wore on, and we then prepared at last light to withdraw. Then my idea of withdrawing was we would all withdraw by myself and three others. And they would go back about 250, 300, perhaps 400 yards to the rear and take up a covering position. And then we would withdraw. Well, they started off just the half light. And I looked over the top of the crest, and there are a blooming great gang of Chinese coming towards me.
What
were
the numbers?
Oh, well, I don't know how many there were. It was certainly more than a dozen. Might have been 20. Might have been more.
How far?
Oh, they're about 100 yards. 150 yards.
You hadn't heard them?
Nobody'd seen them. And so I got onto the artillery chap and I said, hey, when I stop firing, I want you to shell the area and we will run as fast as we can back to you. So this was all planned. And anyway, as I got nearer, I thought it was about time to fire, so we fired. Rapid fire.
How close were they putting?
Well, about 100 yards, I think. Yeah. I didn't want them to get any closer. Anyway, we fired. I know I shot two, And I don't know how many more was shot. I really don't. We didn't pay. We fired a magazine each, changed magazines, fired a magazine each, and then picked up our Bren guns, and we went like the clappers back here. Well, we got back there and were panting like mad. When over came the artillery, and there seemed to be an awful lot of bumps coming. And in fact, the artillery chap had pushed over a divisional artillery chute.
On the large scale shoot for a small number of Chinese.
We found some, which nobody else had found for a long time. Anyway, we got back there and we didn't go forward again, obviously, and we retreated back to pick up our debussing point, back to Talon headquarters, and then back to B Company. Considering we had done a very good job, whether we had or not is another matter for conjecture.
Was there a patrol as usual to that checkpoint the next day?
I think it might have been 2 days later, the one when the gunner officer and the platoon commander were both killed. I think that's in my notes, actually. And that was that. We then what did we do? We did an advance some days later to adjust the line. And we were just going to adjust it to straighten it or whatever it was. And we did the advance. Didn't actually meet any Chinese, but we did get shelled and mortared. And we didn't have any casualties, or I think we might have one or two. Not me personally, but the company. The Van Doos, who were on our right, they had quite a lot of casualties because they didn't dig in straight away. And then the following day, the dear old Norfolks came up and relieved us after 2 days in the line, taking over. And we thought, God, these guys are raw. And then we went back towards the Imjin, stayed a couple of nights in case we were required to counterattack. And then we went back to a camp that had been set up at near Yuzhongbu. Here we had a free-for-all. There was as much drink and food for the soldiers as they wanted. We were guarded by the South Koreans. And
keep you from being harmed or keep you from getting out.
Well, I think it was, yeah. Anyway, everybody let off steam. We had a champagne breakfast for the brigadier. We were then driven to Pusan Station with the RTO, Railway Transport Officer of the Americans. Was not going to let us board the train because half the soldiers were drunk. But the CO said, I've never seen any of these soldiers drunk before. So we all got on this wretched, horrible train with wooden seats, and we travelled to Pusan. And we got off a train at Pusan, and we went to the British UN camp. And we were re-kitted and all the things that they do at those places, and washed, and we had a few days. We went to the UN cemetery to see the UN graves. And about the fourth day there was a typhoon. And it was really quite frightening because I was looking at a reamy workshop and the whole roof came off. It was corrugated iron. We had a church service, and we said goodbye to the doctor and we said goodbye to the padre because they had to stay on. They hadn't done their full time or what they should have done. And the Empire Holiday steamed into Pusan, and an American Negro band sort of played Will You No Come Back Again. And I think we played the green hills of Antrim as we sailed out of Poothen Harbour.
When you did that advanced contact, which didn't actually have a contact, did you have artillery and mortar support laid on for that?
Yes, we did, yes. Oh, yes, very definitely. But we didn't need it.
So that then was support on call rather than...
Yeah, on call, yeah.
Did you have any armouring support?
No. Not that I know of.
Purely infantry?
Purely infantry. No, we didn't have any armour. They might have been on a hill behind, able to support us, but they certainly weren't with us.
How was your platoon deployed for the advance?
Oh, I think two sections up, me in the middle, the third section across the back. Mm. Normal infantry style.
Two up.
Yeah, two up and bags of smoke, as they used to say.
The sections, were they moving in line or were they moving in file?
They were moving in line.
They were?
Yeah.
So you've got extended line.
Yeah, extended line, yeah.
When you're moving in that sort of formation, what sort of rate of movement can you keep up?
Very difficult question. It depends upon the ground you're on. If it's... I think in that ground it wasn't too bad. We could do about, I think we were moving at about 100 metres a minute or something like that. Obviously if it was loose gravel or a lot of scrub, we would be doing 100 metres in 2 or 3 minutes.
The new positions you occupied, what were they like? When you got to your...
We started to dig and we dug the positions properly. We didn't dig any shelters. So.
Were they on high ground?
Yeah, they were on high ground looking onto higher ground in the distance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said that the bamboos got caught in
the... Yeah, they were on our right. They were further up the hill than us and they... Don't know what they did, but they seemed to caught a bit of Chinese artillery fire, which didn't come down the hill towards us.
Did you have anything to do with them?
Nothing at all. Well, I suspect there was a liaison patrol or two, but no, nothing at all. Nothing at all.
You said that Norfolk seemed to be terribly raw.
Well, I think they were. They were more national service than we had been, because we had had reservists as well. And of course, the young officers had not been anywhere, hadn't done anything. Nor had ours a year before.
Did they seem to be in good spirits as they were moving in?
They were, yeah, but we nearly had to go back in the... There was a rumour at one time we might have to go back from Yuzhongbu to help them out, because they got attacked a couple of times. Well, I don't know the details. Perhaps it was only rumour. But there it is. It was a year which finished, and it was a year of experience which I didn't want to repeat too often.
Do you think you learned any particular lessons in Korea during your time there, of a more general nature?
It's just part of furthering one's education. thinking about it, I suppose, it tied in a lot of things which we had, one had been taught at Okcho, or one had learnt through the ages about having medical support, having artillery support, mortar support, the importance of having fresh rations against compo all the time. And also, you had to realise, which I don't think the soldier today, officer today does, because he's never there long enough, what your troops, what their rates of pay were, What, their next of kin? Where were their next of kin? In those days, most soldiers made an allowance to their mothers. I don't know that they do that today in the army.
Most of them are married.
Yep, true. But they didn't in those days. And they, and you should know how much a soldier was getting, and it's very important to know that sort of thing. I always, as a company commander, used to ask officers about certain soldiers at various times. How much does so-and-so get? What grade of a private soldier is he? Does he support a mother? Does he give a mother an allowance? Has he got any legitimate children? You know, you've got to know what your what makes your soldiers tick. If you don't, if you don't do it as a company commander, the battalion commander can't run a battalion properly, in my opinion, and I'm not always right, and they've never said I was right, but there you are.
Did you learn anything particular about tactics?
Not really. Not really. It was different to Malaya, i.e. Malaya was the first Sri who shot. In Korea, it could be anybody who fired. Again, later on, we can talk about Kenya. What happened in Kenya? Anyway, I'll move on.
On the ship home.
No, we weren't going home. Going to Hong Kong.
Going to Hong Kong.
Yeah, oh yeah. In those days, they didn't say you've had a year's fighting. You can now go home. We were going to Hong Kong. The Black Watch, when they pulled out of Korea, they had to go and fight Mau Mau for a year, so that they all have free medals for the Queen Mum when they came home. Yeah, we went to Hong Kong, and our next job, I was told in Busan I was going to be assistant adjutant. I don't think I was really fit to be assistant adjutant. I enjoyed my soldiers too much, you know. But anyway, I was made assistant adjutant, and there were a lot of changes in the battalion within 3 months of arriving in Hong Kong. New company commanders came out. Old company commanders went home or went to staff college, jobs. The reservists all went home. And in fact, it was a changed battalion within 3 months from the one that had left Korea, including the CO had gone. Gerald Rickle was still there.
Did he become the new CO?
No, he didn't. He went to be commandant of the Brigade of Gurkhas, of the 2nd Gurkhas. And from there, he went on to be admin commandant of the School of Infantry. And prior to coming to Korea, he commanded the Ulster Rifles at the Rhine Crossing. He had also commanded the Divisional Battle School of the Para Brigade in Palestine. He was a man of full-time commander. I thought he was treated abominably, but there you are.
What was the role of the assistant adjutant?
Oh, stand in for the adjutant, I suppose. My adjutant, when we got to Hong Kong, to start with, was a chap called Ken Neely, who's still alive, not very well, who became a brigadier, awfully nice chap, and he was replaced by Norman Wheeler, who was Roger Wheeler's father, who became a major general. And my main job, I suppose, in the thing, was courts martial.
Did you have many of those?
In Hong Kong?
Yes.
Well, it went on and on and on.
Oh, really? Why? What was going on?
Well, we weren't a very well-disciplined battalion when we got to Hong Kong. They decided that they would let their hair down.
Was this a reaction to constraints of life and career, do you think?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. We weren't very popular. The first thing was, within 3 months, we had more traffic accidents than any other unit in in Hong Kong. We had our VD rate was high, and this all culminated at the end of over Christmas with us and the Argyles having a punch up, two battalions.
What
led to
that?
Oh yeah, it was the staff in Hong Kong. It was decreed that everybody was to be paid their Korean gratuity on a certain payday, and as laid down by the staff, paymaster or what have you. And anyway, we and the Argyles were up at Fan Ling, and the gratuity was paid out, and I think the least any soldier had was about 15 or 18 pounds, which was a lot of money. Anyway, the punch-up started in a bar. An Argyle put a carbine on, or a rifleman put a jock's hat on, and there was a running battle. It was quite a big battle. Everything was used. Even the carriers were taken out by the Argyles, and they all came roaring down from Queen's Hill. And the band of the Argyles lost all their kilts because the Ulster Riflemen pinched them off and the band turned up. Then the Royal Military Police turned up and they were seen off by both battalions. You can imagine, it was a...
Sounds like the village constable arrived to try and...
Well, I wasn't duty officer that night, thank goodness. In fact, I was dining with the Argyles. I think the adjutant of the Argyles at that time was John Slim. Anyway, by morning it had all been sorted out. And of course, the Brigadier, Billy Burke, decided he would speak to both battalions. And they would both arrive at the Brigade Square. So we all marched off towards Brigade Headquarters. And we arrived first, and we were to form half a hollow square, and the Argyles were to come on and film the other half. Anyway, we arrived first with drums beating and bugles blowing and all the things that Ulsters do. And then we stood in line, and then the Argyles came with their pipers playing. And their CO's voice wasn't loud enough, and they didn't hear him say halt, and the rifles gave him a cheer. Oh God, what a thing. So anyway, we were all given a lecture. The Brigadier came down and we were told that we were a disgrace to our two regiments, and proper soldiers fought with arms. And I thought, good, let them have those. And anyway, it culminated in that both battalions were given 28 days confined to barracks. And off we marched home to our respective camps. There was no ill feeling. It was just that somebody had said, pay them. If it had gone into credits, this would never have happened.
So it wasn't just a question of them having too much to drink?
Oh yes, it was. It was too much drink. I mean, they all had 15, 16 quid in their pocket. Well, you can imagine them. Generally, the soldier never had very much money anyway. So that was that. And then I said, well...
Did that lead to any... Were there any court-martials as a result of that?
I don't think there were. I can't remember one.
So it was just a collective punishment?
It was a collective punishment of 28 days CB. And we were there. And at this period of time, I actually applied to become a regular officer. So I thought, well, you know, I'd like to be a regular officer now.
Why had you changed your mind then?
Well, I thought, well, you know, I'm enjoying myself. I'm enjoying Hong Kong. I've proved myself in sort of war, where I think I have. I didn't run away. So I thought, well, I'd like to join the Royal Ulster Rifles. So I went to see the CEO and he said, okay, I'll put you forward. So I duly filled in the required forms. And a couple of months later, or I can't remember the timing, I was told you are returning to the United Kingdom to go to a regular commissions board. I thought, well, this is a bit of a waste of money, isn't it? And anyway, I was put on the troop ship, 5 weeks to the UK. Got to the UK, had 4 days leave, went to the RCB, passed it, get back on the ship, it's the same one, going back to Hong Kong. So I got on it, and away I went back to Hong Kong. And the CEO said, oh yes, we've got a signal, you've got your regular commission, okay, fine. Now get down to it, and we've got to get you on a few courses and things like that. And we're going to send you down to the Far East Training Centre in Johor. So off I went to the Far East Training Centre in Johor to do a weapon training course and something else. I was down there for 6 weeks.
Were you learning things that you didn't know?
No, it was they considered that everybody should do a small arms school thing, and there was a small arms school detachment there which was training people. I did it. There were quite a lot of Burmese on the course I was on. It's a normal one that they do it at Warminster now.
Used to
it used to be at Hive, yeah. It was an outstation of Hive. Anyway, I went back to the battalion. Back about, not very long. And he said, CEO sent for me one day. And he said, Gordon, I got bad news for you. And I said, what's that, sir? And he said, you haven't been given a regular commission in the Ulster Rifles. Oh, I said, well, what the heck? This seems a bit funny. Why am I being, you know? He said, well, the problem is the Inniskillings have now got 2 battalions. There was an expansion of 6 battalions in the army, and as we were the top 6 recruiting, our battalion had been reformed. Other battalions that were reformed included the Black Watch and 1 or 2 others. And you've got to go home to join the battalion. The Inniskillings want you on the next troop ship. So I was actually very, very sad. And anyway, all the Ulster Rifles commiserated with me and said, oh, well, you know, you're leaving the Belfast Corner, boys, and you're going back to the Yeoman, backwoodsman of Fermanagh. And I said, yeah, but I don't come from Ireland. Anyway, there was no thing, and away I came home. Another 5 weeks. So
boat.
On the boat.
So you'd had back and forth.
Well, I'd had... In my time, I'd done 6 trips, so I spent about a year on boats. Anyway, I arrived home, and I applied for leave, and they said, can't have any leave, they said. You've got to go down to Dover and report to the 1st Battalion. So I went off down to the 1st Battalion and arrived. And that was a rude awakening. I was picked up by the signals officer from the station. Officers didn't have cars in those days. And I went up to the castle. We were in the castle. Went into the mess. And Dick said, oh, you've got to see the adjutant at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And he said, and watch it. So I went along to the adjutant's office and I said, good morning, sir. And he said, morning, stand outside my office and wait. Oh, God, this is like a concentration camp. Anyway, I was waiting and eventually he came out and he said, straighten up your corbeen. Now I'm going to march you in front of the commanding officer And